Welcome to another episode of CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. And we are here, as always, with Brian Skelly, the mortgage guru from William Ravis Real Estate. And boys, it's good to be back in the studio. But man, that home show last Saturday, that was something else, huh?
I enjoyed it.
Good times.
It was fun.
I know that was you guys' first time like being live at an event like that. I had the privilege of doing it a couple of years ago. And you know, it was really fun to get out there and to see some of the 94 Niners. You know, they were coming up to the table and they're like, who's who from the show, right? The face
see,
to
that,
the name.
That was a cool part. I didn't know where that listened to you.
People are actually listening to us.
Right? Like, we have something valuable to add to it. No, and it is funny because I think we were talking after, like, you hear a radio personality and you're like, oh, I wonder what they look like. And you look them up and you're like, not what I was picturing. So I'm curious if we fit the bar of what people think we look like when they actually met us.
I didn't know
that
Skelly was a redhead. I don't like him anymore.
Nobody's got anything bad to say about Ginger Skelly. You're all right. But man, there was thousands of people through there on Friday, thousands of people through there on Saturday when we were there. We weren't there the whole day, but I mean, there was a ton of people. And then they had another big day on Sunday. And I am kind of bummed we missed the Ty Pennington talk Saturday afternoon. But by that point, I was tired and home on the couch at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you guys stay for that?
No. I left.
I did not.
I was busy.
One of the coolest things I saw there, it was Earth Tech, I believe was the name of the company. And who's seen The Lord of the Rings here?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
In the Shire, the Hobbits, they build their houses like into like the mounds. They actually are selling homes like that now.
That's cool.
It's like a version of a tiny home. They're like 800 square feet. It's a long dome, right? So they build it out and then they put sod over it and plant grass on it. And then eventually it grows in and you're living in your very own real life chia pet house.
Wow. I wonder how that is with moisture, though.
Yeah, it's going to have some crazy insulation. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so.
I actually took we're already going off on a tangent, but this is a good one. I took a landscape architecture class in college. At one point, I wanted to be a landscape architect. And there was a whole class all about underground architecture and sustainability, because what happens in a lot of cities is most cities are covered in non-porous material, like asphalt and
concrete.
And so all that water creates a lot of storm water runoff that goes into nearby rivers and lakes and Long Island Sound and Connecticut. So that idea of putting grass or some kind of vegetation on a roof has a lot of benefits. It reduces heating costs, it reduces air conditioning costs,
it
reduces
natural insulation too, right?
Yeah, so it regulates the temperature of the house. I mean, humans have been like living in mud huts for like thousands of years.
That's true.
But not a lot of windows. A lot of people like the sunny situation. So that's the downside.
So I walked through one at the home show and they did have two windows on either side. So they did actually have like a window cut out. You know, I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody at the booth, but my big question is like, do you have to mow it? Like, how do you do that? You're like, I'm just going to go mow the roof. I'll be back in 20 minutes.
Probably not. I mean, they have fields and certain kind of grasses that reach my horticultural background is coming in handy.
Here we go. Okay, what's the type of grass called that only grows to be about 4 inches?
You know, you just
like
get
a blue spruce or whatever.
Yeah, you just get a certain type of grass. Or
Kentucky bluegrass? Is that like, whatever they put on golf courses.
Well, who cares if it's, I mean, if the grass is 3 feet tall, I mean, if you don't mind living in a house covered with grass, I don't think you're worried about mowing your roof.
I was very intrigued. I sent a picture to my wife and she was like, absolutely not. She's like, that is way too small of a house. She wasn't opposed to living in like an earth house, I guess we would call it.
Yeah.
But she was opposed to an 800 square foot house with like not a lot of space to move around.
Yeah.
So.
Well, then you get into appraisals and the appraisers have what they call square footage below grade.
Oh.
Which is appraised at a lower value than square footage above
grade. So the entire house is technically below grade, even though it's on top of the ground?
It's going to be. Yeah. I don't think I could do a loan on an underground house, as far as I know.
Oh, you just wait until I buy mine. I'm coming to you.
I've never tried, so we'll see. First time for everything.
All right. Then, you know, I'm going to buy it with crypto, and it's going to be an underground house. All right, how's that?
Call somebody else, Chaz.
No, but there was a lot of vendors there, a lot of good takeaways. And, you know, we put together a little list here of some of the big things to consider to how to prioritize your efforts and what to address and when to let go when selling your home, right? Especially in this market with all the competition, you know, people don't spend $30,000 redoing a kitchen in this competitive market when somebody may come in and hate what you did to it. And then they're going to rip it out and redo it. It's going to cost you a lot of time getting on the market. You're not going to make all of that money back in a normal situation. And yeah, for all you know, it's going to be gone in 6 months.
So. Exactly.
But some things to consider. Cosmetic flaws. I can't tell you how many times I've been walking through a house and you see like all like the holes where the pictures were that they took down. Mm-hmm. So cosmetic issues like fresh paint. I mean, anybody who's going to sell a house, if you do nothing else, throw a fresh coat of paint on there. Like it just brightens everything up. It gives it that fresh, clean feel. Landscaping, right? Especially yeah. if you live in a house that is a dome and covered by grass, make sure you mow your lawn.
Mow your roof.
Yeah, mow your roof.
Yeah, curb appeal. I mean, it doesn't cost that much to put some mulch and flowers out front. And make, exactly. You know, the first impressions make a big difference.
This time of year, true. You can go and get some like spring flowers and just kind of decorate them, right? Spruce
it up a little bit.
Yep. Some other things. So minor drywall patches, we hit on that. Faucet replacements. I mean, yeah, you don't want a dirty, dingy faucet that's been there for like 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. A sticking window. Okay. I could see that. I actually learned, you know, I used to think that when you broke a seal on a window that you had to get a whole new window. You can just take that window out, take it to a glass shop,
glass company, the paint out,
and put a new paint in, and then boom, you're back in action.
Huh. Yeah, I remember learning that. I was surprised to learn that as well. That's like, we're like, you know, those foggy kind of like water in the window. I had a condo once and we would get it in there and I called the HOA and I was like, there's water in there. And like, just call the glass company. They'll take care of it.
We actually have two of those at our house in our front window because when cats go by our front door, the dog jumps up in the window. And so he's broken two seals by trying bark and growl at the cats.
I didn't know you could break them that way.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, it's just a little bit of moisture that's in between one little panel. We have the ones with like the grids on. I'm like using my hands here, like the 94 Niners out there can see what I'm doing with my hands. but yeah, either like the UPS guy comes to the door or a cat comes in the driveway and he's like, get out of here. So. I'll be fixing those.
Yeah, not super expensive either. No. It was like $125. Yeah,
very affordable.
Get a window seal fixed.
Electrical switch plates. I mean, come on. Like, this should be like a no-brainer, right? You know, I hate walking through a house where they don't have an outlet cover on there.
Yeah, or they're all different colors.
Or they're all different colors.
Like the almond and the white.
What are they, like 25 cents each?
That's easy fix.
Yeah. Caulk tubs and showers, front entrance cleanup, replace carpet, landscape and mulch, to Skelly's point. Next one, minor electrical issues too. Like if you know you have some non-GFCI outlets and you want to pop a couple in near the faucets, just save yourself the headache during the inspection. Mm-hmm. Driveway or walkway cracks, that can get a little pricey, but if you're handy and you could do it yourself, I would say go for it. Grandfathered in building code issues, you don't have to worry about those because they're grandfathered in. So that's a good one.
I'm going to ask Chaz a random question. Yeah. He doesn't expect. How about hardwood floors? Redoing the hardwood floors, refinishing, what do you think?
Got it. Especially if you've been in the house 10, 15 years, you've had like kids and animals running through there and they're all like dusty and dingy. You got to do it. You definitely have to do
it. The price is not too bad on that.
Yeah. So those are some tips and tricks that we took away from the home show last weekend. And I'm very excited because when we come back for segment number two, we're going to have Rod Cross, who we're getting ready to send off to Boromir, Italy to compete in the World Transplant Games. We're going to hear how his journey has evolved since we last spoke to him 2 weeks ago when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, now joined by Rod Cross of The One Team and Brian Skelly, mortgage guru from William Ravis Real Estate. Rob will be back with us in just a couple of minutes, but we wanted to make sure we're getting ready. What are we, about 4 days out from sending Rod over to Italy to compete in the World Transplant Games? And now, Rob, we had you on a couple of weeks ago and you were giving us the details on it, but first of all, before we get more into that, I want to hear, how's your preparation been going these last few weeks?
Thanks for having me. And I've been working out really hard. Killington,
pumping the weights, pump that oil.
Yeah, not so much. No Arnold involved. It's more like Franz Klammer, but they probably speak the same, they do speak the same language. But It's working out at Killington, trying to get the legs and the timing and going through the gates. I mean, free skiing is very different than going through the gates as far as when you race, the timing and the line that you pick.
No, you mean going through the gates. That's actually going through the flags.
The flags are called gates.
Gates, yes. Got it. Okay.
Yep, exactly. And so that is, it's more about the timing. Because you can have somebody who's extremely fit, but if they don't time it right and they're in their approach to the gate, they could get all off pace, and then the next thing you know, they're moving too slow.
And you were telling us in the break that we actually have a little bit of a different style of snow and skiing here in the Northeast than they do over in Europe, and so you're hoping that some of our weather, or some of our more dense snow, kind of firmer snow, will carry its way over there to help you out because it's a little bit faster and easier to maneuver?
Well, anybody from New England knows that the best skiers come from New England. So
there we go.
If you ask some of the pros, you ask Michaela Schifrin, who's the best in the world, she'll tell you that she and her friends, the best ones, all come from Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts, and upper New York. It's a much firmer snow. Some people refer to it as ice.
Yeah, you guys sound like the marketing department at some of these ski resorts. It's a firm snow.
You can't cut tracks on the soft, fluffy stuff.
But what scares other people, what scares the people from Utah and Colorado and California and parts of Europe, we call normal conditions around here. So
okay. And so you leave on the 28th or 29th?
Leave on the 28th, arrive over there, transfer up into the mountains. It takes a little while to get there. And then I'll get there one day early, get acclimated, probably do an afternoon skiing just to get used to the altitude and the type of snow it is, do a little research on the mountain and I'll ski the trail that the course is going to be on, just to kind of get an idea of what it feels like, and then be ready for Monday's first competition, which is the giant slalom, which I thankfully, that's one of my better ones, and I pulled a bronze out of Banff, Canada for that.
Is that the one with like the two gates you have to ski between instead of what's giant slalom?
The giant slalom is the extended version of the slalom, I guess. So it's more of an arc turn, but it's more of a controlled speed. With the downhill is just the point it and rip it, you know? So it's just more space in between the gates or the flags.
So Rod, you mentioned, so the game start on March 3rd and they run through the 8th. You're going to get there on the 2nd.
Okay.
And you're only going to have one afternoon to run these courses to get some practice runs in here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I've been practicing enough here at Killington. I've been fortunate that I've got a guy up there named Doug Tucker who helps me out, and some other friends that help me with understanding, again, the concept of racing versus free skiing.
And they can recreate the course that you're going to be going down, essentially, or all the courses the same, just done on different mountains?
Similar. They're all based on similar characteristics. Yeah. But whoever sets the course sometimes could set it a little bit more difficult or a little less difficult. And in this particular type of race, they'll probably set it for the medium person. So the better skiers will just shred it.
Shred it.
Yeah.
All right. So before you came on, I heard a little rumor, and you mentioned it before, that you've been skiing with Mr. Skelly before, but Skelly said he may have taken you skiing down the mountain instead of the other way around. Is there any truth to that, or is that like a little Skelly white lie?
Brian can live whatever world he wants, and that's okay. I can say that Brian is a formidable skier. He does very well.
Formidable. Okay. All right. So
coming
from somebody who's going to the World Transplant Games, being called a formidable skier, I think that is quite the compliment.
He handles his own very, very well. In fact, we had a really terrific day.
Awesome.
Because sometimes you're waiting for people, and not Skelly. He's quick and he's fast.
All right. So he can keep up.
There you go.
Okay. He can do more than keep up. Right. He's very good. Yep.
We're going to have to have our own version, maybe a little one team race down the mountain here. I'll grab an inner tube. You guys get on some skis and we'll see who can get to the bottom.
A little powder ridge.
And we'll be scooping you up with the snow shovel.
Well, that doesn't sound as much fun as I thought it would. But anyways, back to the 12th World Transplant Games coming up in Bormio, Italy, March 3rd through 8th. Rod, you brought us some stats to kind of help put it into perspective. How many people could participate in these games, and how many people are actually still waiting on someone to become a match for them?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm just trying to help and to just get more people involved in understanding what the organ donor program is like. My friend Lindsay Vig from Donate Life of Connecticut is doing a terrific job to help with awareness around Connecticut and the New England states. And she was recently sharing with me that, currently right now there's over 100,000 people on a waiting list. And that's
United States.
And in Connecticut alone, there's 1,300. So the staggering number is 22 people die that are on the list, that even are on the list. I mean, who knows how many people pass away that aren't even recognized for these things. So if you could imagine and put it into perspective, if you walked into the Super Bowl, we all watched this, many of us watched the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. And, you know, could you just imagine 22 of those people not walking out? And so there's your visual for you. I mean, I wouldn't take those chances. I'd be like, oh, if I walked into that stadium, I'm one of 22 that are not going to make it out. I mean, that's not something I'd want to be involved in. So we need to get better at our support. And, you know, 95% of the people in the United States say they're supportive of this type of program, but only 55% nationally are registered. And some of our states are worse than others. Connecticut, you would think, is an educated, just a very involved state. We're only at 47% participation as donors, whereas you have other states like Colorado, Wyoming, Oregon, Michigan. I mean, they're up above 65-70% in some cases. And so, you know, Connecticut, I'm just, you know, I'm disappointed in my Connecticut neighbors because there's 1,300 people on the wait list and only 47% of the people are willing to be donors.
And to put that
we have to do better.
Yeah, put that in perspective, there's roughly 3.6 million people in Connecticut. And so if 1,300 of them are on that transplant list, that's one out of every 2,700 people.
Yeah. So there you go. That's another visual and perspective right for you there. And, you know, and then that's not even getting into the demographics of, you know, of you know, culture and race and things like that. So there's vast changes in that type of thing too. Some of the communities that actually have the highest level of kidney failure are, and it affects their community more than, you know, that type of community much more than anybody else for the kidney failure. And this is all documented stuff. But the participation is only like 20-25%. So wow, we have to just get better on awareness. And that's why I speak to people. That's right. That's why I'm very thankful to be here with you guys today, just to give your audience an idea of you know, the humanitarian effort that it takes and the personal effort that it takes is small in the grand scheme of things, because you can't take your parts with you.
Right. Absolutely. 100%. I can say I'm an organ donor, so I can breathe a little bit easier on that one. Because to your
Skelly?
Point,
Skelly,
I actually don't know if I'm an organ donor. How would I
look
find
on your
out?
License.
It's on your license.
It's on my license.
Yep. I always say put the heart on.
Yeah.
Put your heart on and make sure it's there.
I'm gonna get called out on the radio.
Now he's gonna go change his license.
All right, well, this is a good example. So if somebody's not an organ donor, they look at the license, they don't see the heart. How do they sign up?
So you can go to Donate Life. And you can go to
.org,
I think. Yep. Okay. And I'll double check that for you. But it's a Donate Life of Connecticut. If you just Google that, it shows up. There is a connection for the sign up. Also, I think the most important thing is that you tell your family what your wishes are, because
right,
you tell them. You know, people say, "Oh, where I want to be buried," and people say they do a do not resuscitate. Or they say, "Oh, I want to be cremated." So they talk to their families about things of that sort, but they don't talk to their family sometimes about being a donor. And I think it should be one of the first things we talk about, because that's one of the first decisions that needs to be made.
Well, absolutely. Because as much as you are bringing awareness, you know, with the 94-9ers and everything else that you're doing, but you're also fundraising. I forget the young man's name. What was his name who passed away, and his family gave all of his organs or every one that they could to other organ transplant people.
Yeah. So what you're referring to is the young boy who was shot and killed in Italy when his family was on vacation.
Right.
And they called, in dedication, they call the games the Nicholas Games.
The Nicholas Games.
Which is
correct.
A portion of the World Transplant Games. And with the Nicholas Games, this young boy, through this tragedy, is celebrated. Mm-hmm. And as I talked about in our part one, I'm really psyched, because there is the aspect of the transplant games that is just for kids.
Right.
And so when I get on the transport in the morning and high-fiving with these guys and they're smiling, and some of these kids, like I said before, dealt a bad card, and, you know, they really haven't had some great experiences like many of us have had. And so to do this type of thing, I mean, the courage and the dedication that they have, mm-hmm. and the fortitude and that they have in their healing, and they're so helpful to others, because when a kid has been struggling, fighting for his life for the first 3 or 4 years of his life, and now his smile is going ear to ear. I mean, just beaming.
Right.
Just the essence of life. I mean, that's gotta be, it is a wonderful thing to see. It's gotta be inspiring.
Worth it. Absolutely. And if you'd like to support Rod, you can go over to the GoFundMe page and search Rod Cross. He is almost to his fundraising goal. And again, he is self-supported of this trip. He's going over there with his own funds, but he is also fundraising in, on behalf of the Nicholas Games to give back to those who need that type of help. And Rod, you're going to be back probably like March 8th, 9th. We'll give you a few days to recover. But
no,
then
the 11th.
The 11th. Okay. We're definitely going to have you back, and hopefully you'll be wearing some shiny new hardware, but we do wish you all the best of luck from all of us here at the One Team and all the 94 Niners out there. And yeah, good luck, man. And we'll see you when you get back. And that's also going to do it for us on this segment of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. I am Chaz Cook, back with Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, your number one team in the state of Connecticut for transactions closed since 2020, year after year. We just keep piling them up. And of course, joined by Brian Skelly, mortgage guru from William Ravis Mortgage. We just had our good friend Rod Cross on the show, sending him off to Bormio, Italy. He takes off on the 28th of February and then will arrive there right on the 1st. He'll have a day to kind of test the tracks, and then he is going to compete in the World Transplant Games. What an incredible journey that was. I mean, some of the stats he shared and like the impact that those games have on the individuals who are transplant recipients, just amazing. And he definitely shed some light on some things that we can all do a little bit better. I mean, we don't really have a lot of donors here in the state of Connecticut, and we have 1,300 people on a waiting list. Right. So
I heard a little bit of it. He's doing an amazing thing. Yeah, bring us back to gold, Rod.
You got to go to Donate Life if you would like to become an organ donor. And then if you would also like to support Rod, you can go to his GoFundMe page and just search Rod Cross. He is almost to his fundraising goal. And again, he's raising money for the Nicholas Games, which is for the youth that are transplant recipients as well. So best of luck to Rod. We can't wait for him to come back and hopefully come back with some shiny new gold and share his experience with us. And on that note, though, we've got to break down what the One Team has done for the last 7 days here. It has been a busy 7 days. We have one new listing, 12 under contract, and 8 closings. Our first new listing is 125 Stonehenge Drive in Newington, Connecticut, hitting the market for $359,900. You've got 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths, just over 1,000 square feet. It is a serene oasis in the heart of a peaceful neighborhood. It's a charming split level with 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths, a host of desirable features that promise comfort and convenience. We're going to have some opportunities for you guys to go and check this one out in the open house section. But if you would like a private showing, you can reach out to Riley at oneteamct.com. All right. Under contracts, 12 of those bad boys under contracts in Griswold, East Hampton, Hartford, Plymouth, New Britain, Bristol, Seymour, Guilford, Meriden, Windham, Norwich, and Waterbury. I think we covered every county in the state of Connecticut on that one.
It's amazing.
8 closings. Congratulations to our buyers, sellers, and investors. We have closings in Oakdale, Franklin, Manchester, Guilford, Wolcott, Deep River, Madison, and East Haddam. Okay, we were a little bit more consolidated there on our closings, but our under contracts, man, we were literally everywhere. All right, open house is one going on today, Saturday, February the 24th, 125 Stonehenge Drive in Newington. That new listing I just mentioned goes on right when the show wraps, or right after the show wraps, starting at 1 p.m. and runs until 3 p.m. today. Again, that is 125 Stonehenge Drive in Newington. And going on tomorrow, Sunday, February the 25th, we have 2 open houses. One is at the residences at 66 High Street, the award-winning condos. The final building is done. There are multiple units available there, so you can head over there from 12 to 2 p.m. and check those out. And then you've also got another opportunity, if you can't make it to Newington today, to go to 125 Stonehenge Drive at Newington from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, February 25th. That's going to wrap up this week's One Team Weekly Rewind, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. And that was the other thing I meant to ask you guys, all right? So our sponsor, Service Station Equipment, we were in their booth. They were so welcoming. They brought us right in. We had Dougie Braun on. You guys got to meet Dougie Braun, the tank man,
awesome
for the first
guy.
Time.
The man, the
awesome
myth, the legend. In
and,
person.
And of course, Martin yes. McKinney. You know, we can't thank him enough for that beautiful lunch we had at MJ Sports Bar. We were talking about that. We were full for days after.
That guy's hilarious.
Yeah. So good.
Bang Zoom. Yeah. Bang Zoom. So if you have any residential tanking needs, you can reach out to Service Station Equipment at 1-800-801-TANK, and Dougie Braun, the tank man, will come over. He will get you set up. He will let you know exactly what you need. And actually, he was telling us we're kind of going away from like traditional oil tanks or what we see as traditional oil tanks. And now they've got, it's like a plastic tank with a steel casing on the outside of it, and they're vertical, so they take up much less space. Yeah, very
cool. I had never seen one of those in person. I got to see it at the home show, and it takes up a lot less space in your basement. You know, you got room for all your other stuff.
Yeah, it's very convenient. Actually, seen a couple of them in some houses I've shown over the past couple of years. Take up way less space. You're right.
And easier to work on too. I mean, the old tanks are big and cumbersome, right? And so like this one was set up where you can get into different parts of it, you know, add or remove different sides. So service station equipment always out in front of the competition and bringing you the latest and greatest in residential tanking needs. So again, you can reach out to them at 1-800-801-TANK and ask for Dougie Braun, the tank man. Oh man, I still, there's like kind of Rod story and everything that's going on over there in Bormio, Italy. So happy for him and his opportunity to do that, and just really wish him the best of luck. But we do have to talk some real estate here on CT Real Estate Radio. And Skelly, you have a theory, I guess I would call it. I don't know if we've got
an observation.
Observation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, mortgage demand takes a massive hit as interest rates cross back over 7%, but that's not what you're seeing in your world. And you also caught on to something that a lot of people may be subconsciously doing and not even realize it.
Yeah. So Chaz and I were talking the other day off the air. We're talking about what we're going to talk about on the radio. And he asked me how's business? And so I told him I had the number of loans that I submitted in January was one of the best months I've had in a long time. Not only because of a lot of applications, but also the size of the loan seemed to have increased. There was a lot more larger mortgages, people buying homes in the 500 to a million range. Whereas I felt like in the fall, it was a lot more kind of entry level 200 to 400 loan amounts. Which is fine. We're happy to help people in all price ranges, but it was an interesting thing to observe. And so I kind of reflected on that and was like, well, why is that? Like, what's different now than it was in the fall? And it occurred to me that the stock market has had quite a upswing in the last 4 to 5 months. I'll tell you a quick personal story because I'm not an expert on stocks, but I do make inferences of what people think, how about people feel about their money based on my own personal experiences. And
from your Robinhood account?
Spoiler alert, this is not really a story of me being financially responsible. This is probably one of the less financially responsible things that I've done, but you can learn your lesson from my hard way experiences. So I had some pretty good years in 2020, 2021, and I managed to stock away some of that money for a rainy day. And I didn't, you know, generally if you're going to put money in stocks, you do that with money that you don't plan to need in the immediate future. So right. I had some extra money. I put it into a investment account. I was like, you know, I'm going to buy some stocks with this money. And
hopefully you bought some NVIDIA.
I did not buy NVIDIA.
I did, huh?
I am not good at picking stocks. This is not a story about how Skelly picks stocks.
This is a story about not to take Skelly's stock advice. Got it.
Take my mortgage advice. Don't take my stock advice. But so anyways, I checked my savings account in December 31st of 2022, right around the new year. I was like, all right. And it was down. And I was like, oh, that stinks. You know, I put all my money in these stocks. They're not doing well. It's down. And I was not thinking about spending that money. And it went up from the beginning of 2023 to the summer of 2023. A lot of that came back. Right. So my losses weren't quite as bad. So as many of you listeners know, last summer, my wife and I, we spontaneously decided to buy a pickup truck and a camping trailer and do a lifelong goal that we've had to drive across the country. And I had to use a big chunk of my savings. And I think if the stock market hadn't gone up from January 1st to July, I would not have felt as good about taking a big chunk out of my savings account and putting it in. And so the reason I'm telling this story is I think that's what's going on with a lot of home buyers right now. So when home buyers that were thinking about buying a high-end home are looking at their savings in October, they were feeling the way I was feeling, like, oh man, it's down. But then now they're looking at it and it's back up. So I was like, well, I wonder what those numbers are. And are you guys ready for an example? Here we go.
Yeah,
here we go. I got the numbers for you. All right, here it is. So we're going to use a round number of $100,000. I know some people out there have $2,000 and we'd love to help you buy a home. And I know some people out there have $500,000 and we'd love to help you buy a home. But for the, keep the math easy, we're going to say, assuming you had $100,000 in the S&P 500 on December 31st, 2022, okay? 1 year later.
Hold on. Let's build up the anticipation.
Oh, yeah, we're coming
here.
Up on my break here.
Yeah, so we've got $100,000. Let's kind of frame it up for him. We've got $100,000 in the stock market on January 1st, 2023.
January 1st, 2022.
January 1st, 2022.
Excuse me. January 1st, 2023, beginning a little over a year ago, 14 months ago.
So 14 months ago, you've got $100,000 in the stock market. And when we come back, you're going to fill us in on what kind of growth someone could have seen if they stayed in.
There's highs and lows of this story. You're going to want to come back after the break to hear the story.
We're going to run you through the peaks and valleys of 2023 in the stock market, according to Brian Skelly, when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. All right, we are back for our final segment here on CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook, joined by Rob Wallace of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate. And before we went to break, Brian Skelly, the mortgage guru, was about to break down some wins and losses in the stock market. So his example is if you had $100,000 in the stock market. So he likes to use the round number. So if you had $1,000, you can just, you know, cut off two zeros and do the same math here. But if you had $100,000 in the stock market on January 1st, 2023, what was that roller coaster like?
I think it's affecting the real estate market. So this is not stock market radio. This is real estate radio. But the most people that are buying a home in the $500,000 to $1 million range, I see them often putting down 20, 30, 40%, right? And a significant, maybe if they sold a house, they might be getting that money from selling a house. But a lot of these folks have money in the stock market. So how people feel about how much money they have, and even if you're just looking at your 401k, like if it's up, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm rich. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go buy something.
I'm ready to retire.
Yeah.
Right? 41, I'm retired.
Even if you're not taking your money out, you look at your 401k is down, you're like, oh, I feel broke. It was lower than it was last month. So this is really, you know, the psychology of money and home purchasing, and buying a house is the biggest home purchase. So here we go. No further ado. We're going to look at the roller coaster of having $100,000 in the stock market over the last 14 months. Here we go.
We're breaking this down by quarter, by month.
Highs and lows. Highs and lows. Okay, we got some lows. Key dates here we're going to discuss. Yeah. All right. So we started out first day of 2023, just 14 months ago. 12 months later, you fast forward to January 1st, 2024, that $100,000 had lost $19,500. Okay.
So you're down 20K, call it.
You're down 20,000, roughly. All right. So then, I might be reading my notes here. I think that was 2022. So it had dropped in 2022. I apologize. Correction.
So on January 1st, 2023, you're down $20,000. Yeah, so, you're at 80,000. Yeah,
so if you'd started off at the beginning of 2022, you're down about 20,000. That was the story I had alluded to. Everybody was not feeling good about their stock market first day of January 2023. I apologize. All right, correction. So here we go. So from January 23 to July 28th of 2023, slowly climb back up. Your balance went from 80,500 back up to 96.
Okay. So we're almost whole.
Yep. You're not quite back up to your 100,000, but you went from 80 to 96. You got back 96% of your money. And the real estate was doing pretty good last summer of 2023.
Yeah. After the terrible spring we had, we did have a pretty good summer. And then the fall, let's see where we went in the fall.
That's where we're going. So here we go. From July 28th of 2023 to October 27th of 2023, the S&P went down again. During that period, your savings fell from 96,000 down to 86,000. So you had a roughly 10% decrease just from July to October in about 3 months. Coincidentally, at that same time, the average mortgage rates in October were about 8%. So we had the highest mortgage rates in 23 years. And the Mortgage Bankers Association reported in October the lowest level of mortgage applications since 1996.
Wow.
So we had this combination of super high rates with everybody feeling not great about their savings.
So highest rates in 23 years, lowest applications in 27 years, call it.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And your $100,000 investments down to 14%. So you're not feeling good about your savings account. So then what happened? Mortgage rates declined from October to December. And although they've been going up since Christmas, they're still about 1% lower right now than they were in October. Now, drum roll, please. If you had invested $100,000 at the beginning of 2022, how much would the balance be on that stock market close yesterday on Friday.
I'm going to go up 13%.
It would be $105,000. So okay. Since October of 2023, that original $100,000 investment has gone up 19% in the last 4 months.
4 months.
Wow.
So the moral of the story is people are going to be feeling better about their savings account. They're going to be more likely to cash out. And I think that's why we're seeing more high-end properties selling right now.
Okay. And I can justify that for you here. I got some data, you know, because we have to back everything up with data with the CNBC article, because we know that in the month of January, when rates were hovering between 6.5 and 6.8, mortgage demand was the highest we had seen in a good number of years, right? Mm-hmm. A good number of months, I should say. And then all of a sudden, we got the reports came out, the CPI report, the inflation report. The Fed had a meeting. They didn't hike rates, but the reports didn't look good. And so rates shot up. And yep. we ended the week at, 7.1, 7.05, something like that. And on that note, since rates have ticked back above 7 over the last, call it, 10 days, mortgage demand took a massive hit when interest rates crossed over 7%. Applications to refinance a home dropped 11%, and applications for a mortgage to purchase a home fell 10% for the week and were 13% lower than the same week a year ago. So that trend that you're talking about there, that makes sense. I mean, going up 0.5% in interest rates slowed down mortgage applications by 10% and also dropped us year over year there. So that is some interesting data. I was not really... You know, it makes sense when you break it down like that, but it's obviously not something that you're regularly thinking about. Like, you know, right. we know a lot of investors watch those reports, the CPI, the inflation report and the jobs report. Like, those are like the big three things, and that's what the Fed's looking at. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously, usually when the Fed is about to meet, the rates will spike up in anticipation of a hike, and then they come back down.
Yeah, and part of the reason I told that personal story before the break is I don't even know if the buyers are really thinking about it. It's almost like on a subconscious level. Right. Like, they might not even be touching their 401k money as part of their home purchase. But, you know, if it's up, you know, if you've got $200,000 in your 401k and it goes to $250,000, you feel a lot better about making a major purchase than you did when it was at $200,000. And I don't even know if some people even realize it. So I'm just kind of...
Yeah,
I think that's an interesting thing to think about.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we know that mortgage applications dropped 10% last week and they were 13% lower, but that brought them down to their lowest level since early November 2023, when we were right around 8% or 7.8%. Mm-hmm. So all in alignment right there. Your hypothesis is now being backed up by some data. I think we might be ready to publish here on, we're going to call it CT Real Estate Radio. What do they call that when you got to graduate from college? Thesis. That's going to be our thesis paper.
Go. Okay.
Right? What do you guys think? Can we do it? We can put it together?
Let's do it.
We got to talk about something next Saturday.
So. You got to write it. So. you're on writing that out. So we're going to leave that to you. You know what's interesting, though? Like, so we're talking, obviously, about single-family home buyers, typically, maybe a condo, maybe a multifamily. But we're talking about a... non-institutional buyer for a lot of this information, right? When we're talking about mortgage applications and buyer demand and home prices, right? Most of the things that we're focused on is that, you know, myself, like somebody who's going to go out and buy a house, you, Rob, you know. But Redfin seems to think that investors bought 26% of the affordable homes in Q4 of 2023. So when I say the word investor to you, what's the first thing that pops into your mind?
I'd say owning property,
buying,
renting.
So owning like rental properties?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So you said you used to own a couple of rental properties. Would you consider yourself like an investor, an institutional investor?
Until you brought it up, no. But I guess I have an LLC, so I guess.
Okay.
What about you, Skelly?
I have a couple rental properties. I mean, when I think of institutional investors, like sometimes people think about, you know, people in other countries owning corporations or hedge funds. Like, that's a big concern that like hedge funds are buying all the rental properties and so making it harder for home buyers and spoiling the American dream. But we, you know, even though people get concerned about it, you know, the question becomes, well, is that really happening? I think, is that where you're going with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, the Redfin report says that real estate investors purchased 26.1% of the most affordable U.S. homes that sold in the fourth quarter of 2023. That's the highest share on record and up from 24% a year ago. That's also surprising to me because we know in 2020, 2021, when rates were at the bottom, you know, 2-3% and money was cheap, that's when we were seeing a lot of the institutional buyers.
True.
But the reason we're really getting into this is because we want to clarify what Redfin means is an investor. Okay. So they consider an investor any buyer whose name includes at least one of the following: an LLC, mm-hmm. an Inc., a trust, a corp, or homes. Okay. So that really just rolls everybody under one blanket there, right? But that's not how it really plays out, because Brian Skelly, mortgage guru, has a single family home where he and his family lives. He's also been fortunate to buy some rental properties with his family. But I would not consider you to be an investor, quote unquote, because you're not going around snatching up all the properties and just trying to create.
Buying a corporation, buying 1,000 properties. I've, you know, a couple rental properties that just happen to be owned by an LLC. Yeah. Does that make me?
I also look at consistency, you know,
an institution. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, like I wish it was here this week, but there's a quote from Byron on here. And he's like, you know I have ever bought a personal home and put it into an LLC or maybe a rental property. It's just a smart thing to do. If the home's in your name, you're personally liable. Right. If anything, God forbid, happens, you have your insurance, you know, you do all your due diligence, but accidents do happen. And if it's in the individual's name, the tenant can then come after them, or somebody slips on the sidewalk outside their house. But if you
there's
put
another
into,
layer of protection, you know,
you put it into an LLC. Yes. And now you create that buffer between your personal and then the actual property. And, you know, you give yourself some protection. So it's the smart thing to do. I don't think that anyone who uses an LLC should automatically be lumped in as an investor. It just doesn't.
Well, I guess it makes it challenging to whoever's mining this data to say, like, what are they going to do? Check every LLC that buys a property and figure out, I don't even know how you would do that. Figure out like how big is this LLC? How many properties do they own? I mean, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Which makes it even harder to say, we don't really know how many properties are being purchased by hedge funds and, you know, overseas corporations.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that an institutional buyer is defined by these corporations that are owning over 1,000 rental homes. So I think that should kind of, and let's be honest here, if you're like a BlackRock, right?
Yeah.
You're not an LLC.
Yeah.
You're a corporation. You're an S corp, or you're an Inc. You know, you're something much larger than an LLC. LLC is for people like us, right? We just want that extra layer of protection. And maybe we're using funds from that rental property to buy other rental properties. Mm-hmm. So it's on a much smaller scale, but Redfin kind of just did this for the, what do they call it? Clickbait.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they were trying to do. And it did create some confusion, which is why I thought it was important to make sure we talked about that.
Most of them headlines. Yeah.
Yeah. They were looking for headlines, right? Yeah. That, you know, it's 1-2% of homes across America range for these institutional buyers, you know, or 1-2% of homes across America. You know, it's your neighbor, your client, your everyday investor who's going out and buying these homes that they are adding into that 26% there. I bet you if you took all of those out, the number's probably like 10%, something like that. So
makes sense.
Yeah. Very interesting article here from Redfin. You can also check it out on nowbam.com, and we'll post it if you listen to us. But you can head over to nowbam.com and check out the Redfin report. Fellas, any final words for the 94.9ers out there?
I'm going to leave this one to Skelly. He has always the best.
I'm going to plug my website. Let's schedule a call at scheduleloanappointment.com.
Scheduleloanappointment.com. All right, boys and girls, that's going to do it for us on this week's episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.